Welcome to episode 9 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is November 26th, 2011. I'm Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-host, James Furlough.
Mana, mana, ma, ma, manana. Guess where I just came from?
Something exciting.
Something exciting. Yeah, we should totally do that as our last song. Which, speaking of which, it was, for those of you who actually hold on to the entire podcast, you caught our Easter egg at the end there. So thank you. That's your prize. But it was interesting. I had to, like, totally shift the audio to make it happen at the end. It didn't line up at all, which I wouldn't even say it really lined up when I was done.
I don't think it was going to.
Yeah.
I
think we were
cool. Technically
singing two different songs, technically.
So this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, believe it or not, the technology they're developing.
Whoa.
And James has got a short disclosure for us.
Yes, just want to make it clear that I work for HP, Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent HP's opinion. I should always say I think. I should never say we think when referring to HP. And if I do say we, I meant to say I. That's important.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Thank you.
No problem.
If you want to be able to follow us, you can follow me at Matthew D. Furlough. And, on Twitter.
And I am at James Furlough on Twitter.
Or you can follow both of us at Furlough Bros.
And there it is.
I wanted to say .com.
I was holding out for it. So that's cool. There's nothing. Official. We have a official Twitter account now, huh?
Yes, we do. We've got a couple of official accounts now. We have an official Facebook fan page.
Nice.
The Furlough Bros. Or not the Furlough Bros, just Furlough Bros.
Okay.
We're like Apple and Facebook. We're too cool for the...
Who needs it?
Yeah. We take, what's his name's advice? The singer, Backstreet Boys, or NSYNC, or one of those guys.
What? Justin Timberlake?
Thank you. We take Justin Timberlake's advice.
Oh, man.
You can also go to our Google page, Google Plus page, Furlough Bros. We're getting in on that action. Or you can hit us up at the website, furloughbros.com.
I like it, which coming soon we'll have a new logo, hopefully by the time you actually listen to this.
Nice. Beautiful logo. I'm so proud.
I agree. So, what's the deal, man?
What's the deal? So, pretty exciting week this week, Thanksgiving week. As you'd expect, it was really, really slow news. And by really slow news, I mean we got news coming out of our ears this week for reasons that I can't understand.
It's like they had to fit all of their regular week into 3 days, and they did it.
Yeah, exactly. So, what's new this year?
This week?
This week. There we go.
Whatever. No big deal. You're still high on turkey. I get it. First thing is, getting prepared for whatever this next holiday coming up is, Christmas. People are announcing new things, and we're also coming up with, we just finished, quarterly reporting types of stuff as well. So there's some cool new numbers. But very first, I'd like to say that it is tis the season for Chromebooks. Google announced that they have made some updates to their Chromebooks through their Chrome OS operating system. I have indeed downloaded it, the new one, because I am one of those fortunate souls with a free Chromebook from Google.
I still resent you for that.
You know, you can enjoy that resentment. I'll enjoy my Chromebook. Honestly, the only thing I noticed was that it has that new user face sign-in where it used to be black and now it's white.
Big changes.
I am sure that there's more going on there, but that is all that I notice. Cool, good for them. The other interesting thing about them is that they are lowering the prices by about $50 for their Chromebooks, depending on the model that you get. I'm not sure what that means. I'm pretty sure that's not like a special Black Friday, get ready for the Christmas temporary thing. I think it's more like we're lowering the price from, what is it, $350 to $300.
Yeah.
And they also keep, when they first started, and I guess it kind of makes sense, they were like, you got to be on a 2-year contract, and you got to, you know, give us your first child, and all sorts of restrictions and, you know, things to do it. And they keep slowly backing off. Like, now you don't have to be on a contract. You can just buy them if you're in the organization and stuff like that. But it's interesting watching them. I personally think it's one of those – it's a browser that is too little too late, honestly.
Yeah.
The more I play with it, I went to a friend's house this weekend, and at first I was like, oh, I'll bring my Chromebook so I can have something to goof off with while I'm there. And then I was like, or I'll just bring my phone because it literally can do everything that does plus more.
Yeah.
Decision
and with
made.
The new 4S, you're not even getting a, you know, if maybe you're comparing the Chromebook to like an original iPhone, you could go, well, the performance is a little better, but really that's not true.
Yeah. So, there it is. Don't worry, though. I updated it. I checked it out. It looks cool. Yeah, but
yeah.
I would not say that Chromebooks are going to take the world by storm anytime soon.
You know, incremental improvement is important to continue. You know, somebody else is going to pass you up if you don't do that. or rather, sales will just die
right.
If there are sales at all. But yeah, I agree. I haven't seen anything yet that really makes me, you know, jump out of my chair and go, oh, that's a game changer. That does something that, you know, nothing else can do. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's a shame because the concept is awesome, but it's, you know, this 100% cloud computing PC. I love it. It's just it's competing against the smartphones and tablets, and it's just, you know, they're better. This
yeah.
is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
But,
I understand.
But there it is. So speaking of, PC sales, there was a large, I don't know necessarily large, but some research done. And I honestly, I do not know how to pronounce this company's name. They are the Canalys, I think. It's Canalys. It's canal, and then with a Y-S, Canalys.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's like Canadian analysis.
Is that what, right? Is that what it stands for?
I'm guessing. That's what it looks like. Canalys. I'm guessing.
Canalys. Well, that's different than what I even said. It very well could be. Doesn't say where they're based off the top of my head. Doesn't matter. Whatever. So this research group, potentially out of Canada, on Monday, they came out and they wrote a title that, of course, was going to get headlines. And basically they said that Apple is on track to become the leading global PC vendor, overtaking even our beloved HP.
That's crazy.
And they are saying that they're going to do it before the second half of 2012.
Whoa, that's...
Exactly.
Whoa.
Exactly.
Now, Apple has long been the profit winner, right? I mean, they've always made more money than everybody else.
Yes.
Correct.
Significantly, okay. Yes. Yes. Now, here's the trick, though, and this is the debate that you have to kind of get into. The reason why Apple is going to become the leading global PC vendor, ready for it? Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
It's because The iPad is selling like hotcakes.
Interesting. So this has been a conversation you and I have had before we even started the podcast.
Yes.
The nature of tablet PCs. Are they tablets or are they PCs?
According to this potentially Canadian group, they are PCs.
They are, yeah. You know, it's one of those things where I've actually read a couple of articles, and it probably was spurred on by this article over the last week, that have kind of touched back onto that debate, because, you know, obviously, as a, you know, that's for analytical reasons, that is an important question to ask, and for the markets, kind of helping you define how things are selling and where the trend is going. So, you know, it's important to answer that question. You know, there's so many defining differences between a laptop. A laptop and a tower are obviously computers.
Laptops were not always obviously a PC.
That's true.
That's only recently that they've gotten that distinction. And, or, you know, before it's become, how do I want to say it? Like, you know, when you say PC, you almost think laptop inherently.
Right.
It's been a while. They used to flat out say, oh, these are laptops. They wouldn't say PCs.
Correct. That's, you know, and that's a good point. And the article I was reading was arguing that smartphones and tablets, as we understand them today, are more personable, arguably, than a PC. Which, yeah, I couldn't find reason to disagree with that statement. It's a complex issue. I think it's even more complex now that it's stuff like the new Tegra chip that's coming out. They just announced they're going to try to make it quad-core.
Yeah.
So if you've got a quad-core processor, you've got a gig of RAM, and you've got, you know, 60 gigabytes in your phone, I'm using my finger quotes, how is that not a computer?
It sure sounds like a computer to me.
I'm pretty sure that's more of a computer than a Chromebook.
yeah, really.
You know. So I don't know. It's getting to the point where I think that it's you know, I understand why it's important to try to draw a distinction line, but I think that phones are getting to the point where they're essentially computers. And if a phone is a computer and you've got something that's even more powerful with even more utility and it's personal, it's hard to argue that a tablet isn't a personal computer, especially as it's replacing, you know, your primary computer for a lot of people. You know, that people don't sit down at their desktops, don't sit down at their laptops as much as they use their iPads when they own one. See what I did there? I just equated the entire tablet market to the iPad. The numbers don't lie. So I think it's a very interesting question, and I think that more and more.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we would not be having this conversation right now if a one Mr. Stephen P. Jobs had not come out and just flat out said, "We are in the post PC era, and this is a post PC device." Had he never said that, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You'd be like, "Yeah, it's a PC," but he came out and said it was different, and so we all went, "Whoa." Hold up a second.
This is a new category of device.
Is it? Is it? Which I think it is, just like the laptop was, but it still falls under that constellation or that umbrella of a personal computer. I'm trying to think, though, what doesn't fall under that category? you know, what's the counterexample where you say, oh, no, that's not... Like, for example, is the Kindle a personal computer? Or, you know, I've...
Well, let's start even further out in the world of computing.
Pages.
Is a digital... uh, Yes, I think we can all agree that's not a computer.
Well,
But a digital camera that allows you to edit photos and syncs to your laptop, is that a computer? And I would argue that pretty, you know, I would argue that no, a camera is not a computer, even a really sophisticated camera.
Oh, then neither is a printer by that definition.
Correct. I would argue that, no, yeah, it's not. It's that solidly fits into the category of a peripheral.
Okay. All right.
But I think, and I even being able to update its core software, its operating system, or being able to add on other software like apps, I don't think that necessarily defines it as not a computer.
That's
either,
good, because HP has printers where you can do that. You can even send emails from a computer, or a printer, I mean.
you can send emails from a computer?
It's amazing. Crazy. Welcome to 2011.
The
future is now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, that's a good question about the Kindle Fire, though. I think that's really
easy. Well, not even the Kindle Fire, like the Kindle Touch.
Oh, yeah. I would argue that that's not a computer.
Oh, okay.
Something that's like a pure, especially something that's like a clear e-book reader type thing, you know, I would say that can't be considered a computer.
Interesting.
That's more of
this is a slippery slope we have here. It's clearly not black and white.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, unfortunately, where do you draw the line?
Yep.
Well, it's wherever, here or there or nowhere. I don't care.
I'm going to say, okay, where's my line? All right, basically, if it does not, never mind. I was going to say, like, if it doesn't have a mouse, it's post PC, which means a laptop would have to be but that's probably not accurate. But all right.
So, okay, I guess this is how I'm going to make my definition. If the device that you use replaces 80% of the functionality that you would otherwise do on a laptop or desktop...
80%.
It is 80%. It is can be considered a personal computer. And so I would say that, you know, a Kindle reader doesn't, because it only does the reading functionality... whereas the Kindle Fire does allow you to surf the internet, download applications, you know, play games, a lot of stuff like that. And I would say that, you know, if you were to compare against OS X or a full blown, you know, Windows computer, and you would compare an operating system to that, you would have to say that's a PC. And I think that the Chromebook also needs to be analyzed in that vein, even as this, like, pure computing thing, because it can do all that stuff. It just can't do it without the interweb.
All right.
So I gauge it by how people use it.
My definition is whether or not there is... Yeah, I'm going to stay with this. Whether or not there is a mouse on the screen. Like the little arrow thing, right? Not the actual thing that you touch. But if there is an arrow...
A pointer.
Thank you. If there is that, it's a PC. If there isn't that, post-PC device. That's my definition.
That is simple.
I'm a simple man. You know, I like to keep things simple. So we will let our listeners challenge that if they want. But for now, assuming you count it incorrectly because you're from Canada, Apple will soon outpace HP. Not a surprise, I guess, given where they're headed. But good for them, I suppose.
Yeah. So one of the problems with... small personal computing devices is that you tend to bring them everywhere, including into the pool or into the sink or into the toilet and other various accidental areas.
Okay.
So this brings us to this new technology that this company developed, and it is a spray can that puts a thin coating of super hydrophobic material all over your device, whatever it is, and they claim it can make any iPhone totally waterproof forever.
Wow.
Yeah, which, you know, if you know anything about my battles with lakes and such, washer machines, you know, this is right up my alley. It's pretty cool. It's just a spray can. You can spray it on any device, whether it be a PCB or a calculator or an iPhone.
I've
got a couple of... Yeah, they got a couple of... They got a, you know, it's push-button calculator, so something that's not evenly totally... Or, well, sorry. They actually took a calculator apart and sprayed the inside, so they got a good coating. And then they take two calculators and they put them in a tray of water, and then they use one, and it's a... it's not only a calculator, but it's a... it's one that's solar-powered. So they've got it sitting in the water, and they've got the one that's not been sprayed, and it's just dead. It's not working. And then they got the other one that they're actually doing calculations on, and they're able to push buttons. I thought it was really, really, really cool looking. And since it's just a spray, it's something you can do post-manufacturing. You don't have to completely solidify the case, which is oftentimes the biggest problem with waterproofing or, you know, making something water-resistant, is the only method that people had was to completely enclose the case, make sure that there's no cracks or leaks,
right.
And then you can only submerge it so far before the pressure of the water will just push through or break the case.
Right.
And so you could only guarantee it to a certain depth. Well, this basically, because you don't have to enclose the case, you can just spray it on, and you're good. You don't have to really change your manufacturing at all.
Huh.
They even showed it where they sprayed the outside of an iPhone, which is unique because it doesn't have very many crevices, unlike a calculator.
Yeah.
And the calculator was able to survive for like a half an hour underwater, still working. They could like touch the screen, and it would... it would slide and stuff, and they were to take it out and shake it off. It's pretty cool too, because you can watch and like you can put like chocolate syrup on and stuff. So I'm just watching this. You know, obviously this is for third party, you know, use, aftermarket improvements to your electronics.
That was going to be my question. Is this something where they're hoping to like sell it to OEMs and they'll apply them to their devices so they can say, hey, you know.
Yeah. Right now, because it comes in a spray can, it doesn't appear to be that. It looks like it's mostly for aftermarket use. You want to, you know, someone like me who is a hydrophilic, as it were, you know, to protect my electronics. So,
cool.
Pretty neat, yeah, and I'm definitely going to look into how much a bottle of this stuff costs, because I think it's worth the cost. You know, it could be worth the cost. And the other thing that will be interesting to watch is if this sort of a thing gets proven and it's cost effective, it is something that an OEM could easily add to their manufacturing process. Once the chip's done being made, you just spray it on it, and then all of a sudden you have water resistant devices. You know, maybe not waterproof, but even if you could really protect them against, you know, submersion for a couple seconds, that would be, you know, for people who have accidentally dropped their phone while using the restroom.
Or you leave it outside or something, yeah.
Right, exactly.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, cool stuff. Excited to see it, it make its mark.
Yeah, very cool. So, speaking of leaving your mark... Oh man, we should just have a whole episode of transitions. On Tuesday, Facebook decided to announce some very exciting news. Super exciting. They are very shortly going to be enhancing your content in the site-wide ticker with sponsored story ads.
You mean useful information about potential amazing buying opportunities. That's really obnoxious. I'm not looking forward to that at all.
So, I mean, there's, I understand why they're doing it, right? I mean, this is where your eyeballs are going, so it totally makes sense to do it. And I think Twitter is now doing it, even though for a long time they said they never would. And, you know, it just makes sense, right, to do something like this. The real question is, oh, so I guess they actually already started it and they're slowly rolling it out. So you should see it soon. The real question, you know, is if they can do it tastefully, which I'd like to think that they will, where it's like one sponsored ad, a pie. It's not going to be like, oh, every 5 seconds there's a new one. And I'm hoping that they have some sort of approval process. And like this one, this sponsored ad, it says like, oh, your three friends played like Train City is the example that they give here. So it's they're using your friend's activity to you know, for the basis of this sponsored update. So I'm kind of like, wouldn't this show up anyways? I don't understand why this has to be sponsored, other than the fact that it might be parked up on top instead of just in the flow. I could see that, you know. And if they're doing something like that, you're like, okay, cool, whatever. I don't really care, but it's interesting, you know. That's where they're headed, and so, you know, clearly advertising's how they're going to make their money, and so they're starting to do it all. I think as long as they can keep the flash banners off their site for as long as possible, like unlike MySpace, I think we'll be good.
Yeah,
which it sounds like, you know, that's what they're trying to do. Which Google obviously proved that you don't have to have banner ads to make a ton of money.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think that advertising is inherently evil or wrong or, you know, unpalatable. I do use Adblock because sometimes I think it is. and, you know, but it's like, you know, Google is the perfect example with their text ads. You know, there's a time and place for it. They use your searches. They use information you're looking for. They're trying to make it as unobtrusive as possible. They clearly define it as something different, so you kind of know when you're getting into it whether this is a top result, because it's a top result as determined by their algorithm, or if it's a paid result as determined by highest bidder. So, you know, because of that, I think that it allows users it provides them more comfort with that option. And, you know, I think that as long as Facebook does that, they'll be okay. And, you know, and you and I have discussed the idea of, you know, starting you know, as you're selling stuff, putting ads into a news stream and kind of just having to go with it and trying to make it topical. That way it's not totally intrusive. And I think if you do that, the chances that people will accept it and you'll make a bunch of money doing it go up. So, you know, the question really does become, is Facebook going to be able to do it tastefully? And that is always the difficult question to answer with Facebook.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm sure it'll be fine. It's just one of those inevitabilities that we knew was coming. And it's here.
Right. So,
but, yeah.
We'll see how they handle it.
They finally got tired of enough people ad blocking where they are getting around it.
Yeah, because Adblock does a great job. I just gave one of our cousins Adblock, put it on the computer, and they were like, man, Facebook looks totally different without all the ads. I was like, I don't even know what the real Facebook looks like, to be totally honest. I put it on every computer I sit at.
Yeah, that's a standard. Yeah.
That's one of my biggest compliments I can give to a website, is if I'll turn off ad block for your site because I want you to make money. but interestingly... Oh, and the other interesting part about this is that there are no ads in the apps, the Facebook apps for, like, iPhone and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see, as ads move into your news stream on your phone, because all of a sudden they'll have ads on your mobile devices, too.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So that might be another reason why they're, you know, going that route. You know, and speaking of mobile ads and mobile stuff, so a couple calculations were done, and it looks like HP's touchpad outsold both the Motorola Zoom and Samsung's Galaxy tablet. Which I think is a little bit shocking to a lot of people, since the touchpad was universally panned as a terrible device, and the Samsung
Galaxy
Tab. It wasn't
terrible. It was just more. They were charging more than it was worth.
That's yes. That's, you know, okay, fair enough. But the Motorola Zoom and the Galaxy Tab both got really, really great reviews. Really, really high-powered. The Motorola Zoom was advertised during the Super Bowl. Everybody still went, well, that's a cool-looking iPad, which I think was part of the problem. But, you know, definitely put a lot of time and effort into selling these two tablets, and then the touchpad blew out the door. And, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of people's first reaction is, what was the difference? And I think clearly the only major difference between the three devices was the price tag.
Totally.
So there was obviously, you know, a big spike of sales of the touchpad when they finally decided to sell them for $100 each, whereas the Galaxy Tab and the Motorola Zoom stayed largely in parity with the iPad. And
you mean price-wise?
Price-wise, right. And, well, really and truly, I mean, have you ever picked up, like, the Galaxy Tabs or the Zooms and actually played with them?
No, I haven't.
See, I actually, like, took the time to do it. They're not terrible devices. The only reason why I wouldn't even bother is because I'm already invested in the Apple ecosystem, and there's no cost benefit to going with them, but their size was they were pretty light. They were pretty elegantly designed. They allow for peripherals, which is kind of cool, you know, for certain applications. They're really not terrible devices. They're not better than the iPad. So why buy the copycat when you can get the original for the same price? And I think that's largely what they're suffering from. And I think that they're going to have to learn a hard, hard lesson from HP, which is, and really, you know, the Kindle Fire as well, that if you can sell them for half price of the iPad or less, you can actually move units. But if you continue to sell and, you know, sell these devices at the same price as the iPad, there's no way to compete. People are just going to go for the one that they, you know, that started the industry that has the status symbol.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. Of course, it is interesting. There was another article earlier today saying that the Kindle Fire is on track to become the number two tablet in the market by far, but also by way less than the number one. And, you know, and the real interesting part about that is just it's technically an Android device, but not really managed to run by Google at all. And yeah. So Google's got like this weird problem where it's like, yeah, the Kindle Fire will do well, and they'll have like no control and no say over it whatsoever. And Amazon's got this real potential, like have their app store start to take off, and if they can get them installed on phones, they could even take over the entire app store from Google. I mean, it's right. Just like this weird, like Google's poured in all these resources and all these times, and Amazon could just walk in right underneath them and just be like, oh yeah, thanks, we'll take all the money.
Right. You know, which is, you know, Google, that's part of their concern all along has been this, you know, how do you control the market? How do you make money off of this? And I think so far they've gotten to really, as the creators, they've gotten to ride the train, around making a lot of the money. But Yeah, it could,
well,
it
clearly
could turn on them all.
Making a platform is good, but having content is also good.
Yeah. That is, and that's one of the big distinctions between the Fire or the Kindle Fire and a lot of these other devices. Is it's like it's got the entire bookstore behind it, which I think to a lot of people is a compelling source of content. They feel like, oh, there will be tons of content. Ironically, they can get a Kindle app for any device. Despite that, I feel like that's one of the major selling points, is that it's got, you know, you can get any Amazon book on your Kindle Fire. Like, you can do that with any device, guys. This is not a big deal. But yet, there's that sense of there is content that I can get, and I know that will be there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to watch as this whole thing unfolds. It'll be interesting to see CES this year, or this coming year, just because last year was all about tablets and Android, and I think they're all finding that there's like almost no way to differentiate themselves. And, you know, and it's just tough to make any money when you can't differentiate yourself. And Amazon figured out a way to do it. And so so I think that they are, you know, they are, what do I want to say? They're going to make some money, and everyone else is going to struggle. You know what? We're going to do a first in Furlough Podcast history, and we are going to take an official break. So we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back. Don't worry. Matthew has to let the dogs out.
So, all right.
So we'll be back.
All right. Bye.
And we're back. Thanks for enjoying that break. We will fill it later on once we decide what to do. And so with that, what we were just talking about were the touchpads and who's outselling who. But what I'd like to talk about now is I'd like to take a long, hard 3D look at what Apple's up to.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. So we want to get every dimension of this conversation. So Apple wins a patent for high-end 3D object recognition is the title of this article. Actually, sorry, they win a secret patent.
Not much of a
so
secret.
So basically, I know. But well, basically, they've had this patent in the works, mm-hmm. and nobody really knew about it until they won it.
Got it.
And essentially, what it is it's an app. Or not an app, sorry. It is a technology that does more or less what the Kinect does. It develops 3D maps that allow you to see how see a surface, and then it allows you to recognize what that surface is, what that object is in 3D.
Okay.
So they've got some cool potential applications for this. One is a security system. It allows you to see people. One of the cool, interesting facts that came out actually when Bin Laden was killed is that the ear is as unique as the fingerprint. And so you could do like a
really?
3D scan. Yeah, it is. And so you could like do a 3D scan on people's ears and be able to tell who they are. And so this is a really sophisticated way to look at people and to be able to scan stuff. Another application that they suggested was like, you know, if you take an MRI of somebody, and so you have all this detailed information, you could like put the camera onto the person and then on the screen sort of as like a VR thing an augmented reality thing, it would lay the MRI information over top of them, and you could see exactly where in the body the, you know, veins collapsed or
wow.
whatever. Yeah, so really kind of a neat technology. And it's one of those things where it just kind of shocked everybody because they didn't know it was coming. They didn't even know Apple was thinking about this. And here they are. I think part of it is I don't necessarily expect to see this technology being, you know, showing up in the next generation iPhone or whatever, or the, you know, Apple TV or anything like that. What I think this is it's a defensive patent because the Kinect, I think they're watching what the Kinect is doing as a future interface, and I think that this is sort of Apple's recognition of the fact that it's kind of a cool platform, it's kind of cool technology.
It is cool.
And yeah, and you know, and maybe we should be ready in case people start demanding this from us later on. Because, you know, obviously, you know, they show all these applications that it can have, but it's essentially the same thing that the Kinect does. And so, you know, pretty interesting to see since Apple has, you know, as far as user interface and interaction with your computer device, this isn't something that Apple's really been pursuing, and all of a sudden here's a patent saying, oh, just so you know, in case we need to do that, we can.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's an in case thing. I think they just genuinely think it's interesting, and they're experimenting and doing research in that area, and you might see it one day, you might not. And I didn't really think, you know, they saw the Kinect and went, oh, this is cool, let's look into it ourselves and see what we can come up with. I don't think it's, I just, watching the way they work, I don't think they do the just in case stuff. I think they, you know, they're genuinely trying to make each product as good as they can. Now, they totally play games with their marketing, don't get me wrong there. And even their release dates, I think they play games. But, you know, in their actual products, I think they just are genuinely doing research and trying to create cool stuff. But nonetheless, that's cool. I'd love to see it in one of their devices someday.
Yeah, you know, and especially, you know, I think that there's this whole realm of possibilities that, you know, there's a place for each of these technologies. There isn't necessarily a killer, you know, one interface option that wins everything. I actually do think that there's a time and place for a mouse. I think there's a time and place for a stylus. I think there's a time and place for your fingers, a time and place for your voice. And same goes with, you know, free space gestures. I'm going to start calling it that from now on. I've never heard that before. Free space gesturing.
Wow.
I think that accurately sums up what it is.
I like that.
Thank you for the wow. I appreciate the...
No, so let me just check. Did you just make that up or did you read that somewhere?
No, I just made that up.
Boom. TM. Done. You heard it here first. Free space gesturing. All right, cool. This is why I record this stuff. That's good.
Sweet. So, very cool, very cool.
So let's talk a little bit more about the future here and what could or could not. And I saw two articles, I guess, that kind of... Oh, let me see here. That kind of... they go together, really. And I guess they're both by GigaOm, so makes sense. Clearly, whoever's thinking about it. Let's see. Ryan and Barb. They're talking together. You can tell just because the way that these articles were written, they were made for each other. The first one is asking, is NFC the future? And then the second one was talking about RFID and whether or not big data is going to help it out. And, you know, so NFC, right, is this thing that is currently like in it's in the hype cycle, right? It's like ton of potential, it's going to be awesome, though currently there's not a whole lot going on right there in this space. And you know, and their whole thing and their whole article idea is like, you know, of course Apple's going to make it popular once they add it to the you know, the iPhone 17, and it's, you know, it's gonna, they're gonna create their own digital wallet and it's gonna take off and it's just gonna be, you know, an amazing world. But then in this other article, it talks about RFID. And, you know, and it was like, remember when RFID was going to be awesome and take over the world and enable us to do all sorts of stuff before that we could never do, and that really never happened? Remember that? We're still waiting for the RFID moment, and it just hasn't happened yet. And so for me, it's kind of like, all right, NFC is cool. I definitely get it. Just like RFID is cool. Totally get it. Is this something where we're going to wait around for however many years it takes before we even start to see something? And the cool part about this one article talking about a return to RFID is it's talking about big data and this idea that there is information and there's power in having a lot of data. Just real quick, one article I read earlier, it was saying that they, using big data, they were able to find a correlation between Mac users and where they spend their money at hotels. And basically what they found is that Mac users stay at pricier hotels. That's a classic type of insight that you can get using a lot of data and big data sets and mashing things together. Cool.
Which is particularly useful because you can grab that sort of data from the client if you're running a server, and you kind of, it'll help you know, expect what the person who just logged in is going to, you know, potentially buy.
Yeah, totally. And then you can run a Facebook ad for people who like Macs or like Apple, and and you stand a chance of them going, hey, they'll actually like it more. So totally get it. And basically what they're saying is RFIDs are a way to collect a ridiculous amount of data relatively easily. When it was just all on its own, and the argument was convenience, you can easily scan all of this stuff. It's kind of like, the argument was not compelling enough for people to make the big investments to do RFID. However, now what they're saying is there's this hidden value where if you start tracking everything, you'll be able to unlock all sorts of secrets of the world and profit off of making decisions based off of that. And so that's their whole thing is like, okay, cool. That is still a question. Still, we're not 100% sure, but people are starting to say, you know what? This is getting more compelling. I now have a reason to invest in RFIDs and put up with some of the lame limitations that they have.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And so I look at like NFC right now, and it's this question of, is an NFC and a wallet in your phone, is that in itself, because all we're talking about is convenience, at least for the most part, is that in and of itself enough of a reason to make all of these devices NFC and to put all these readers or outputters, whatever those are called, on all the different, in every single store, on all of your personal other non-PC devices, you like that? And
yeah.
does that in itself make sense? Is it really just around the corner, or is this something where it's going to be just around the corner for the next 10 years?
So that's an interesting question. I think one of the you're welcome. Credit where credit's due.
Appreciate it.
I think one of the things that is the biggest issue of all of these is the classic infrastructure issue.
Right.
It's a similar issue that comes up with electric cars, hydrogen powered cars. Alternative fuel cars. You can fill up at home if you have like a generator, a hydrogen generator, or whatever. But where are you going to fill up otherwise?
And at home.
If exactly, and if there's no infrastructure. Then you can only go within, a certain radius of where you fill up, But there's an entire infrastructure of gasoline. And so unless...
It's a network effect.
Exactly.
Kind of almost in reverse.
But the flip side for the gas stations is, they can make investments into hydrogen power, hydrogen refueling stations or natural gas refueling stations, but there aren't very many cars out there, so it won't be very profitable. So they're not going to make that investment until there's a lot of cars. And so it's kind of a which comes first, chicken or the egg.
Tough deal.
And I think that's similar to what's going on with NFC. Now, what's sort of interesting about this is that I think Google might change the conversation simply because they're afraid that Apple might try to do it. just the fact that Apple's talking about it, NFC's being built into a lot of Android devices. And it's this, it's kind of this new wave, even though there aren't very many readers out there, if any at all. Now, one of the things that Apple does a good job of and always has is they, when they develop a new technology, sometimes they'll put the technology in people's hands, and then you won't even know what it's really used for until a year later when they, you know, introduce this new thing that's takes advantage of that old hardware that you got. It's like Siri. I personally think they're developing Siri because they want to make Apple TV. I don't think they necessarily included it in the iPhone 4S because, you know, they knew it would be a great seller, but I don't think that's why they started it. I think that's one of the perks, but they're going to put it in everybody's hands, they're going to let you use it, and then eventually it'll become the only interface option for certain devices. But everybody's already used to it. And that's one of the things that I think Apple may be struggling with is, what else can you do with NFC? What other advantages can it bring to them so that if there is no wallet option, there's still a use for that technology? And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's like, you know, people are talking about NFC being able to just swipe it by your computer and now you've got all your login information and, you know, it downloads a bunch of data and stuff. But at the same time, why would you use some sort of an NFC antenna instead of a next-generation Bluetooth or a next-generation Wi-Fi? That's a big question that I think a lot of technology companies can't answer right now. And it's like with RFID, it's a similar thing of, you know, we need a really cheap, inexpensive chip that's flexible that we can sew into clothes and we can sew into and we can put into ceramics and we can put into everything. But it's got to be cheap and inexpensive. I think that's the big limiting factor on RFID. But even with RFID, just because everything is tagged doesn't necessarily mean it won't use the NFC antenna to do the reading.
That's true.
And communicating, you know, and so I think there's this real big issue here where it's like everybody's kind of waiting to be able to leverage an already existing industry, and we haven't found a compelling user case yet where people are willing to make that initial investment. People are willing to spend money to get this new cool feature, but as soon as you get a lot of these antennas, these readers, communicators out there, and you also have an affordable way to manufacture RFID, I think that's when you'll see the real explosion. Now, that being said, that may take 10 years. I personally think that that's really what the industry is waiting on. There's not a lack of engineering or lack of science that is preventing this industry from moving forward, that part of the industry from moving forward. It's really an infrastructure case. There's a lot of uses that would be really, really great if they could leverage an already existing infrastructure, but until it's there, none of them alone are compelling enough to get everybody to spend the extra money.
All right. Yeah, that'll be... Yeah, we'll see how that turns out. Hopefully, next year will be the year, but it'd be okay if they waited one more year. That way, at least when I get my new phone, No, I'm kidding. Figure it all out next year. That way, it's perfect for when I come back around for my new phone. That would be cool. So, this next article that I want to talk about speaks to the corporate opera that is tech. It's just the way that it works. Quora is a Q&A site, and it's pretty fun. I like hanging out on it and just reading some of the questions that people come up with. And they're getting a new guy. His name is Andy Johns, who really close to my mic. His focus is on user growth and engagement. He used to work for a company called Twitter and a company called Facebook. So now he's coming over to Quora. And so, you know, there's like three companies right there. But it's not all good news for Quora because, well, I guess they also says they hired a guy from Zynga. He's going to focus on mysterious growth thing. Oh, along with, okay, weird. So they got him. But who they're but they're also losing somebody to Pinterest. He's their lead engineer. Sounds like it's kind of a bummer. So there it is. You know, that's the corporate opera right there. This one guy was at Twitter, was at Facebook. He's now with Quora, but Quora's losing a guy to Pinterest. But it's okay because they're still gaining a guy from Zynga. And for these three guys, there's just as many doing the round robins inside of Apple, Google, Yahoo, I'm sure Spotify, Instagram, and whoever else you know, is around. It's pretty crazy.
So what's interesting in these sorts of things is it kind of begs the question of, you know, obviously your employees determine where your company goes to a large degree. Or you know, the ship analogy works well in this. You know, you've got your captain who's kind of setting the course. You got your map reader who's kind of figuring out, you know, how to actually get from A to B versus based on what the captain wants to see happen. And then you might have a bunch of people working the deck and, you know, working the wheel and stuff like that that are all operating together to help you get along that course. And so the question, and individuals can really affect the direction where the ship goes, even though the captain's supposed to be setting the course. You know, and in a company like Apple, obviously Steve Jobs got a lot of that credit, but then you have guys like Jonathan Ives and Tim Cook who, you know, as Steve Jobs' role lessened in its importance and, you know, eventually he passed away, it became clear that Jonathan Ives and Tim Cook had huge influence over the company.
Right.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what these guys have, you know, what they're doing. You know, it's like you lose this engineer and maybe he was, you know, I wonder, it doesn't say what he was doing before Quora, but obviously
engineering.
Yeah, engineering. But, you know, he's probably someone who's great at building large, secure databases. And that's something, especially, you know, expandable databases. And if that's what he's good at, then, you know, that might mean that Quora is ready for an explosive growth, technologically speaking, but they're not necessarily seeing that growth. Whereas Pinterest is seeing huge growth and...
Right.
And recognition, but they may not be ready for it technologically, and so they're, you know, pulling this other guy. Whereas you got Zynga's Robert Matey, and I didn't believe you when you said he will be focusing on this mysterious growth thing, but that is literally word for word what the article says. But you know, you've got two guys that it's clear are focused on growth and engagement. They're, you know, it sounds like Quora is at this place where they're ready to grow, and they're ready to get recognition. They've got a good product now; they just want people to pay attention. And so it'll be interesting to see if that catches a lot of attention now that that's the direction that the company's moving. I think just clearly by who they're hiring and who's leaving, that's obviously what their game plan is right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's very insightful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I try to be whenever I can. Speaking of what we see, so this has been kind of getting a lot of attention in the news cycles just because it's very futuristic. It says that scientists have been testing HUD contact lenses on rabbits, and they're hoping to bring augmented reality to your eyeballs. This is kind of a cool piece of technology. You know, you see it in the movies all the time where, you know, I the classic example, which isn't really totally analogous, is the Terminator, where you see his vision and he's like,
yeah, that's awesome
as he walks around. And so, what they're this is really what they're kind of hoping to do is to be able to change what you see and what you're watching and as you're walking around. And so your computer, you know, my hope and dream one day is to have implants plugged into my brain so that I can just use like a mouse or like a, you know, some sort of an interface just by thinking about it, and have like earplugs plugged in and HUD things on my eyeballs so I can just like close my eyes and like surf the internet just by thinking about it. This is my goal. But some people want tattoos. I want cybernetic enhancements. But
cool beans.
It is a pretty cool technology. It's a cool concept. I think it's something that you know, militarily you'd see a lot of use for, you know, airplane pilots, stuff like that. People who want to be able to see information, but not necessarily have heavy, you know, head machines on or goofy glasses. The other nice part about this is because you get one contact lens per eye.
Tray day.
Yeah, exactly. 3D, you know, augmented reality and heads-up displays is that's the future. So I don't know. Oh, and the other nice part is you can do holographic images and stuff that don't exist, but only your eyes can see. There's all sorts
that's
of
slightly
cool things
creepy,
that,
actually. I'll be honest.
Yeah. To be totally honest, it's a little bit. It harkens to movies that are a little bit dystopic. So it'll be interesting to see how well people accept this kind of technology. But it's being tested, and they claim they're seeing pretty good results at this point. It's limited just because it's still new technology. But, you know, oftentimes with this sort of a thing, you know, if you can prove the principles of it, then it just becomes a manufacturing question, and you get some funding, you do some research, and then boom, you know, 5 years later, everybody's got a contact lenses that, you know, constantly connected. But pretty
so
cool.
So how does it, how does it get its power again?
I am not entirely sure.
Oh, all right.
Rereading the article. Also, scientists have yet to figure out a workable energy source. At present, they need to be within centimeters of a wireless battery. So essentially, it's
we still gotta wear like glasses.
So essentially,
or something.
It's yeah. So you know that's. But the field of wireless energy is really moving forward, especially for small low power circuitry, which I'm assuming that this would be since it's small and you don't want a lot of high power going around the eyeball. But you know it's the sort of thing where you know it's essentially just a screen on the retina, and you would let you know there's all sorts of things you could do with it, and that would have a lot of usefulness as it develops. So I think this is one that you're going to have to watch long term to kind of see the results of and to see how it moves forward. But it's definitely something that I think military and law enforcement and, you know, like I said, airplane pilots, they're gonna want to see that sort of thing move forward, and they'll probably pick up a lot of the research costs as time goes
on.
Cool.
Dude, that's awesome. I hope that happens. So I'll put up with just the glasses for the short term.
Yeah, me too. You know, if they could get some sweet looking glasses that, you know, do the trick, I would be totally down with that as well. But yeah, definitely neat technology. So kind of rounding off our week, Google, the company that made its money advertising but never advertised, has started advertising. Have you seen this ad?
Yes,
James?
I have.
The Google Plus sharing, but like real life.
Kind of, without showing any real people.
virtually real life. Yeah, so it's we'd love to play this for you. We're still working on some of the technology of our podcast, but we'll have the link for you if you want to just go to our website, check out the video. It'll be totally worth it.
I might even get crazy and just straight up embed it, actually.
Ooh, whoa, very cool.
I don't know, why not?
Do it, man. So basically the video just shows you Google Plus. It's, you know, very, you know, has people talking over it, showing them reaching around and dragging, you know, people into their circles and stuff. If you use Google Plus at all, this is really a familiar feel. But what's interesting is that, you know, what social network has advertised in the TV space? The answer is not many. Facebook hasn't ever, Google Plus hasn't ever, MySpace never did. You know, it was very much a thing of you got online and, you know, word of mouth is the most powerful type of advertising, and that's what they relied on. They wanted this sort of authentic enthusiasm to drive the conversation of who's going to win in the social networking space. And here's Google, you know, deciding to shake things up and put on a TV ad where they talk about the product, what the product does. They try to hit home by connecting to people. And, you know, and clearly what their goal here is to educate their audience on what the difference between their platform and Facebook is. Ironically, Facebook has used a lot of that same, you know, they have a lot of that, those same features now, where with groups and your circles and whatnot. But, you know, Facebook is, they're making that the central selling point, and that's what they're trying to sell. It'll also be interesting, I think, as people move forward and they see the Google Plus One button, you know, if all of a sudden people start using that simply because now there's knowledge about this product that Google offers. And I don't know, it's interesting to see they're really pushing this one. They want this one to be a winner. And they're hoping that they can generate interest where interest has already kind of fallen off.
Yeah, I think it speaks a lot where at the beginning they said, we don't need to advertise, we'll just make a great product and they'll find us. And, okay.
Good luck.
So now they're advertising. I don't know what that means. But I think their biggest shot is them figuring out a way to integrate Google Plus into everything that is Google, to where Google Plus is Google. You don't separate the two. Sure, it starts out as a destination page and that's there, but it just permeates everything that you do with them. I think that's their secret. I mean, in some ways, that's what Facebook is, right? You visit Facebook.com, it's 100% social. And I'd love to see it where you visit Google.com and it's 100% social. Yeah, there's a search engine. Yeah, they make buckets of money off of it, but that's in some ways a piece of it. And Plus is the glue.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. I think that is what they, you know, would like to see happen. And I think if they can do that, they can really pull that off and, you know, integrate that. And I think it's like the Plus One buttons being everywhere. That's going to really continue to move that goal forward. You know, it's a clean site. I don't have any problems with it. Like I've said a couple times, I try to remember to use it because I think it is going to continue to grow. But yeah, if it could really become, it's like your Gmail, your calendar, your Reader, Google Search, and it's all kind of tied up in Google Plus. I think that for a lot of people could be a really compelling platform. And you know, the more that those things get tied together, you know, it's like a Google Plus, or it's like Google Gmail trying to guess who you want to email. If you could just go, I want to email this circle, and, you know, tie up all your contacts into Google Plus where they're you know, as you add contacts, they just kind of integrate with your Google Plus system. I don't know. I think stuff like that, the more they do that, the more they let them kind of cross-pollinate and the really useful features of Google Plus get integrated into other services, and reduce redundancies of services where you're, you know, that's when I think they get real powerful. Of course, some people may not like that.
Yeah, well... Yeah, we'll see. It'll, yeah. I don't know. I think they're going to keep working at it. I think it's going to, and they got enough money where they can, you know, they can keep doing it, keep working it, keep tweaking it. And like you said, the Android tablets are pretty good. We'll see if they can do the same thing for Google Plus, where it eventually gets to the point where you're like, man, you should check it out, actually. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Of course, that's not quite good enough, but,
Yeah.
They'll get there. They got their plus buttons all over the web now, so that's obviously working.
Yeah, I think that's a big first step, you know.
Which, by the way, it's on our website. You should plus us up.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Cool.
Please do it.
Google the plus. So, anything else going on in your life? Any final comments?
A couple things, two things I wanted to mention.
Okay.
Number one, so obviously as you go to the website, because you're going to go to the website when you go to the website, you can, that's furloughbros.com, you can go to our Facebook, go to our Google Plus, and we have this new awesome logo that was designed by yours truly. But I wanted to kind of talk about the programs I used to design this.
All right.
I used Aviary.com and GIMP were the two programs that I kind of tested out. Mm-hmm. GIMP.com can be GIMP.com or Aviary, AVIARY.com. They're both essentially layered photo editing programs, very similar to Photoshop. And I've used Photoshop for a long time, so this is the first project like this that I've done where I didn't use any Photoshop. It was entirely in these two programs, and I'm going to have to say, Photoshop, I think, is still the cleanest.
Wow.
But since I don't want to invest in, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars of software for something that is only a few, you know, it's only a little bit better, I don't think I'll go that way. Aviary.com works great for smaller projects. Mm-hmm. That you need to do anywhere. One of the things that they, you know, it obviously works on any computer. It's fully web browser based, which is what's so cool about
that's
it.
That's cool. I'm gonna have to check that out.
Layer, oh, it's really awesome. It's got all the tools you would need. The only real problem is that it kind of has layered. There's a limitation on what it can do from just the size of the file because the whole thing is done browser based.
That makes sense.
If you get a lot of layers, which I usually do when I'm working on projects, it has a hard time rendering all the layers. So you have to turn off some to see others, and which meant that I felt compelled to collapse layers and stuff. And the problem with that is that I'm not done. I may want to go change a layer, and then, oh no, it's gone. So I didn't really like that, but for smaller projects, I would use it again.
Hmm.
Especially if I don't have my personal computer with me, which has the client based or not client based, but the native app GIMP, which is also a layer based photo editing application. That one worked great. I thought I was really pleased with it. I would use it again for other projects.
Cool.
There are some things that I didn't love, just user interface stuff, but it was able to do everything that I needed it to do, and after a while I got pretty comfortable with it. So GIMP is definitely I think given my preference, I'm going to use GIMP. Given $1,000, I'm going to use Photoshop. And given I mobility necessities, I'll use Aviary.com.
So Adobe, we need you to sponsor us so that Matthew can use your software and talk about how awesome it is.
I tell you, I will drive clients to you. I'll use your stuff all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
And another thing that kind of went on yesterday was the Blackest of Fridays, and by Blackest of Fridays, I just mean Black Friday. And I did make a trip to Fry's Electronics.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy. Oh, man. So a couple years ago, we went at 6 a.m. for the doorbuster, and there was like 50 people in front of us. There was like no line. We were in and out in like 20 minutes. Totally painless.
Wow.
You get home early. Got home by like 7 o'clock. So got there at 6, got home by 7. Great experience. So we thought, well, we'll do it this year, but the deals we want start open at midnight. Well, it turns out there's a big difference between the people who don't go to bed and the people who have to wake up at 6 a.m. Because there was, you know, Fry's Electronics has a huge footprint, and there was a line all the way around the building.
Wow.
And then when we got inside to buy the laptop, there was a line that was three aisles long, going up and down three aisles, that we had to wait through. Then we finally got the computer, and then we had to wait in line to check out. That one went up and down six aisles.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
We got there at midnight and got home at 3. It was ridiculous. We looked at each other and went, this is a terrible idea. The only thing is that the computer that was on sale, it was an i5, 4 gigs of RAM. It had a 500 gigabyte hard drive, and it was
15-inch monitor.
After 15-inch monitor, and after taxes, it was less than $500. Which
who
is,
made it?
You know, it's a Fujitsu laptop. So it wasn't actually the one I went in for. So I haven't opened it yet. I'm still kind of waiting. I want to do a little more research to make sure that I want to commit to this purchase. But as far as, you know, for a $500 laptop, it seems like it's just a great little trooper. So, and
wow,
we got to use it in the store, which was good. So hopefully that will soon become my new primary laptop, and
cool,
it'll do everything that I needed to do. Cool little computer, but yeah, the lines were nuts, man. Talk about a recession.
Wow, that's crazy. I heard that at the best, there's a Best Buy in, I'd say the Salem or Portland, I don't remember. But they were showing Harry Potter Book 2 or Book 7 Part 2 at 9 p.m. in the
gosh,
parking lot. For and I just to give a little hint of like, oh man, people mean business. That's pretty crazy. That is intense.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's definitely. Well, all I did was go watch The Muppets. This is a movie that I don't know why, but well, I do know why. I discovered their YouTube channel a while ago, like when they first came out with it. And so I immediately subscribed. And I actually subscribe to them inside of my RSS reader. So anytime they do a new video, it comes straight to me. I don't actually have to visit YouTube. And I do this for, like, you know, How It Should Have Ended and stuff like that, for all the good channels. I got like 10 of them that I follow. And and so whenever they come out with a new video, I can see it. And so they started promoting their movie a while ago, and I started watching these trailers. Because they were, for a while, they were competing for the Webbies, like for shorts. And we're just doing, you know, goofy Muppet stuff, which is hilarious. And so they started doing these trailers, and they were awesome. There's one of them where they were doing a parody of some other band all together, but they were like, we couldn't get the rights to actually do it, so we had to borrow from somebody else, and the only way he'd agree to it is if we put him in the movie. And then they do like a freeze frame, they go, he's right here in this group shot. Just like, it was awesome. It was pretty funny. So we actually saw it today. Just for the record, this is a kid's movie, and so we had at least one crying baby in our movie, and you're watching all the previews and you're like, whoa, this is a kid's movie, because they're all like the creators of Ponyo and, you know, stuff like that. But we did get a toy story short before
nice.
We started. Yeah, classic, right? Like, whoa, a little short film, which was good, of course. But watch the movie; it's really good. Let me preface this. For a kids movie, it's good. It's worth going to see. You don't necessarily have to see it in the theaters, but it's worth seeing sometime in your life, because it's the Muppets and it's their regular craziness. And yeah. And you know how, like, in the Muppet Show, like, the, you know, back when they had it, they used to have a guest, you know, a celebrity guest that would show up to the movie or to the show who'd, you know, kind of be the star. So, like, their whole thing, this entire movie was how many celebrities can we fit into this movie? And it's impressive. the number of cameos and one-offs, and you're just like, what? Whoa. I mean, it's pretty good, but it's worth watching. It was goofy, and so definitely. I'm pretty sure gonna have the Mana Mana song stuck in my head for at least a week now, as a result of them.
Yeah, I'm getting ready for Muppets Christmas Carol now that it's that time of the year. So I might have to make a marathon out of all this. Get a copy of Treasure Island and check out all the classics.
Yeah, I was wondering if they probably don't, otherwise I would have seen it, but if they have the Muppet Show on Netflix, because that'd be cool. I could waste a ridiculous number of hours just watching that.
Yeah,
don't know where to find it, but I mean, literally, I mean, I got to the end and I was like, man, I want to see this. So if Disney's smart, which they are, they're gonna figure out some way to make money off of me. Because right. I guarantee you there's millions of people in the United States saying the exact same thing I am, which is, oh, I'd love to see some of those old episodes again and go that way. So that's what I've been up to, that and eating a ridiculous amount of food.
Best part.
But yeah. So. All right, man.
Very cool, dude.
This was good. So everybody else, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow. And we will talk next time.
Do 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 do